Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. Trey, we are so fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are, sharing their industry and life experience, and maybe a few laughs along the way. I'm pumped for today's guest for a variety of reasons. Mainly because I admire you as a father, as a husband, as a man of faith, a city leader, which we'll get into, of course. So Senior Project Manager of Workforce Development and Strategic Initiatives with Miller Electric. That's a mouthful. So try to say that fast.
No.
There's no chance. City Council Member at Large, which we're going to talk about the difference there. Terrence Freeman, welcome to What the Health Just Happened.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Man, I'm out of breath with that.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. It's a lot.
Let's start there.
Yeah,
so Miller absolutely. Electric, we talked about before we got on camera here. The organization's incredible. What's your role? Because that is a mouthful.
Yeah, I shorten it now and I just say I'm the Senior Program Manager of Strategic Initiatives.
That's still a mouthful, man.
For workforce development. But what it is really an opportunity to walk out in purpose. When I met with the leaders of Miller Electric and just shared my story, my purpose, they responded with a term, you would be what we call an opportunistic hire.
And
I'm
like,
what does that mean? It means you possess what we need in our organization. We got to find how to best leverage it. And so that was the title that kind of encompassed my gifts in the fact that I can go from the civic community to the neighborhood park into a jail system or anywhere and just be me and share the love that God has placed in me with the mission of trying to help people get jobs that lead to careers.
That's a lot to unpack right off the bat. I knew this would happen. So this position, did they create it for you? How many employees are at Miller Electric?
We have over 5,000 employees.
Holy moly.
This is not,
I didn't realize
Miller
that.
Electric is massive.
Let's go.
Right? If you're here in Jacksonville, you know who they are. They're actually all over the country now doing work. The Miller Electric Center with the Jaguars. So 5,000 employees, they essentially created a position for you to come and do what you do.
So they realized that, one, in the trades in general, the workforce was dwindling. Obviously, the folks that have been in it for numerous years are retiring. I mean, it's a great benefits package, but the bench to replace them was very limited. And so Miller really started focusing on talent development, attracting people, developing once we attracted them, and then mobilizing them. And so my direct report, my boss, Patty, they brought in. And that's been her focus. And when I started 3 years ago, I want to say there were five of us on the talent team, and now we're well over 20. So I came in on the upswing of the marketing and the folk recruitment efforts. And so this is how the strategic initiatives of workforce development was developed.
Two things you said, right? So the talent team, is that recruiting, staffing, bringing on talent? Is that involve culture, like the current talent you have, retaining?
I mean, culture, our core values, you know, trust is right at the top, collaboration, stewardship. But it's more so than just recruiting, because we also pour into those that are currently working for us, our project managers, our project associates. So we're developing as well, because we want to always keep the employees on this upward track of mobility. If they desire to go like many of our vice presidents, from a high school graduate to entry level to now being a vice president, we have to continue to pour into them and develop.
What's the track to get there?
It just starts with saying you want that job. And once we get you there, show up on time, be a good teammate and work hard, and you'll earn while you learn, and you will see yourself progressing in the career.
You'd mentioned too the trades. Trey, if you want to chime in, I can't see you.
I'll lean in.
You can just talk whenever. I love when Trey chimes in. The trades, right? So how would you define the trades? Electricians, for sure.
Plumbers. HVAC. Sheet
woodworking,
metal. Iron workers.
Yep.
Yeah, just all of those jobs that we as a society of late have seemed to overlook. But yet we fail to share the importance of it. Like I tell kids, you're an essential worker. If you become an electrician and your job is at a hospital, let's say in Tampa that, you know, unfortunately was hit with a hurricane recently, and someone has a loved one on life support, that hospital wants to ensure that if the power goes out, those patients that are depending on power to continue their life is there. And so as an essential worker, you're going to always have a job. And we primarily do work on data centers, banks, hospitals.
Everything.
Yes.
Permanent buildings that aren't going anywhere.
And on top of powering them and doing all the things to get it out of the ground, we build such valuable relationships with our vendors that they say, hey, can we have you stay and now service our facility. So that's how Miller's grown and spread.
I would argue that Miller Electric is one of the most well-known organizations in Jacksonville, right?
Yes.
Incredible reputation, but they're just advocates for the city. I mean, the way they give back to everyone, and the fact, again, you're there. You're an example of someone with Miller Electric. The other trades, here's how I look at it, too. Do you drive your car here?
Yes.
If the engine breaks, who's going to fix that? I'm not fixing it.
The mechanic. But I think the secret sauce to all of this is the leader. Henry Brown, when he took over the company, you know, 12, 13 plus years ago, had a vision. He's always forward thinking. So there was a huge investment in innovation years ago. And now you look at how many EV vehicles on the road. And so we're one of the leaders when it comes to manufacturing the skids for the Tesla charging stations, the stations that you see around. But he also really values pouring into the team, pouring into the employees, because essentially, and I love how he says it, his job is to see how he can better serve us. And so by him pouring so much into us, it just flows out in our jobs and our performance on our jobs.
Yeah.
And it's just made our company just tremendously grow.
You threw a term out, the bullpen, right? How you always keep the bullpen full. Whatever the industry is, we may not be hiring today, but we're always hiring, right? So you have to keep that bullpen full.
Yes.
Baseball player. Yes. Let's talk baseball.
Love it. Love it, man.
What was the history, the trajectory?
Baseball changed my life. Absolutely changed my life. I grew up in an era where, you know, every kid was preached, you're going to college. And in an educational system that tried to identify early if you were a college prep student or if you were, quote unquote, not on the college prep student track.
Guilty.
And so I was on the college track. However, when I was in school, science wasn't at a point where diagnosing dyslexia, diagnosing ADHD, those things weren't as prevalent. And I found out later in life, I suffered from them. So although I was a high performer when it comes to showing up in class, participating, I didn't always hit those benchmarks when it came to testing, especially those big tests at the end of the year.
ACT, SAT, yes. All those. Yeah.
But I also had another challenge. I had the challenge of being, you know, they always say pick your parents wisely. And so, I mean, I have great genetics and just so grateful for my parents. But they also made a lot of sacrifices for us. So we didn't have a lot growing up. And was faced with a scenario where my mom was like, hey, I can't afford to send you to college. You know, your brother's at a school up in Gainesville, which I'm a Florida State fan, so I won't say the name.
Shout out, go Noles.
Just to be fair, we have Florida State stuff
here.
There
we go.
From Tally.
Yeah, I'm a UNL grad.
And swoop.
And so she says, I need you to find a way. And so I had the GPA. The test scores just weren't where they needed to be. And I played every sport. And I still have that rule in my house. You know, either play a sport or an instrument. I went and bought a piano. It's not tuned, but it's a great prop in the house. It's furniture, but that's their choice. And I did one thing on the baseball field, and I played baseball not because I loved it. It was just another sport in the spring that when my friends who were doing things that, you know, at that time society was telling us that you had three options as a young black man, be incarcerated, be a teenage father, or be dead. Many of my friends were well on their way to doing it. And unfortunately, some of them fulfilled that.
Check the boxes.
Which I hate. But I played baseball and I sat the bench for various reasons. And when I finally got a chance to play my senior year, I never quit. I showed up and practiced hard every day. You know, I had a coach tell me I was out of shape. Mind you, I'm the starting receiver DB on varsity football, starting point guard in varsity basketball, and I'm rolling into baseball season. The coach tells me, you're out of shape.
Is this local to Jackson?
No, this was outside. I grew up outside of the Tampa area.
Okay.
And I teach kids that, you know, adversities are just a chances for you to adapt and overcome. And when you go through that season of life, you're going to gain something from it. So rather than dwell on how bad it feels now, just keep looking at the future of what is it preparing me for. And I hit a ground ball to a pitcher that every pro team was there to see. I still remember his name to this day, Chris Bryant. Lefty pitcher, got drafted in the seventh round by the Cubs. I was 120-something pounds, but I always made contact. And so I hit a two-hopper to him. He took his time, and they say he patted his glove, and he lobbed the ball to first base. And as the first baseman was striding out to catch the ball, boom, my foot hit the bag.
Safe.
Yep.
Oh,
every scout stood up, and only one scout followed up at the end of the game. And I'll never forget this. He said, young man, why did you run so hard? And I said, well, sir, why not? and I'm a respectful young man, and my kids are respectful as well. And I said, my dad told me anything I do, I better do it with everything I have. And he showed me a stopwatch, and he says, do you know what this time means?
Like, timing you run into first?
Yeah.
Okay.
And mind you, I would strike out hitting on a tee. I couldn't hit a ball sitting still, but I could hit a ball coming at me 90 miles an hour. I didn't grow up with any type of formal training. My tee when I was a kid was an old iron pole that we used to hang clothes on, the dry clothes that had rusted and fallen off. So I was terrified to hit off of batting tees because I had a long bat from Kmart.
Oh, yeah.
You hit that metal pole, it hurt.
Yeah.
So I just had anxiety.
Sharp and rusty too. Yeah.
But he shows me the stopwatch and it says 3.83. And he says, do you know what that time means? I'm like, no, sir. He says, well, let me just say it like this. The major league average was at that time, which was 93, it was 4.1. And that's on a ball that someone hits in the hole to the shortstop and they think they're going to be safe. You hit a ball to the pitcher and you ran.
I love this story.
And so he followed me. I stole a lot of bases that year. I didn't know how to slide. So I would run with two and just jump with 3 feet out. My head.
This is senior year.
My senior year, my head would hit the ground. Or I would stop standing on the bat where you're sliding not to go past it, standing up. I would do a backflip every time I ran out to my position. I didn't understand kind of the etiquette of the game. I just saw Ozzie Smith. Love.
Your bananas, baby.
There you go. Yeah. Yes. So I was a Savannah. I was a, what is it? Savannah bananas. Way before it ever came.
Banana ball. In the 90s.
And it cost me some money when I got into pro ball the first time I did a backflip. But Ozzie Smith, I would see on, you know, every now and then. Yeah. And he was the guy that I wanted to play like. And so that said, he drafted me in the 15th round out of high school. And he gave me a line, and I still use this with kids today. He said, good things happen to good people. Changed the trajectory of my life.
Yep.
So
right out of high school, drafted 15th round, yep. You skipped college.
Did not sign with them.
You know, okay.
You want a funny story?
Yeah, I love funny
stories. He shows up at my house. I'd earned an academic scholarship anywhere in the nation. ROTC.
Okay.
And I was
gonna tell your story.
So I was gonna go to FAMU. Both of my parents are FAM grads.
Rattlers.
And I was gonna be a doctor. And the reason I wanted to be a doctor or a physical therapist was because I had surgery on my shoulder one. They hurt me so bad. I'm like, I want to do this to hurt other people. No, no. The true story is I watched The Cosby Show growing up. And every time The Cosby Show, they would open a refrigerator. I never saw it empty. And that wasn't the world that I grew up in. When they would send the kids to bed, they would walk upstairs. We thought anybody that lived in a two-story house was rich.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really leaned in. What do they do for a living? One was a doctor, one was an attorney. So that kind of broadened my scope of what I could be as an employer, because at that time, or for a career, because all I thought at the time was preacher, teacher, firefighter, policeman. Those were people that were so highly respected when I was a kid. So it expanded it. So I was going to go to FAM, full ride. And I was going to a buddy's college signing party, and he was signing with a junior college for baseball. And at his little signing party, coach comes to me and says, hey, where are you playing in college? I'm like, I'm not playing in college.
I'm going to be a doctor.
I didn't know anything about college baseball.
Yep.
I did not know anything about professional baseball at that time. Other than the fact that I was going to get drafted a couple days later. And so he I didn't know I was going to get drafted when I got drafted, but that kind of happened. He says, well, why don't you come play with your buddy? I'm like, well, I got a full scholarship. He says, well, I'll pay for your school. I'm like, you'll pay for school? Okay.
This is a different school than where you're going to go.
100%. School I'd never heard of in a city I've never been at.
What was
meeting it? A coach, Edison Community College in Fort Myers, Southwest Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
I said, well, I need books. He says, I'll pay for your books. And I said, well, sir, I have to eat at least once a day. I'll give you a meal voucher. I'm like, this is interesting. He says, and top it off, I'll give you $800 a semester. That was more money than I'd ever heard of.
How old are you? Are you 17, 18?
I'm 18.
This is like speaking Russian.
Oh,
right?
Goodness, man.
Learning physics for a...
There you go. You know. I saved up $1,000 and thought I was rich. I went to my mom and said, you don't have to ever give me money again. I got enough money now to live off of. This is with $1,000. And so now this guy's telling me he's going to give me $800 a semester. So I'm like, two. How many semesters? He's like, two. $1,600?
This is cool.
I said, yes. I went home and said, Mom, I'm not going to FAM with this free education. I'm going to play baseball. Where? I'm like, Fort Myers. Where? I'm like, Fort Myers.
Pretty. It's kind of nice.
I'd never been.
Yeah.
The first time I went down to register like for classes or whatever was the first time I ever saw the school.
Wow. By the way, I didn't know any of this. And I'm looking at this because there's so many other... You got an incredible story. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. Yeah. Go play college ball. Then did you graduate?
Got drafted again.
After how many years?
After my freshman year.
Okay.
I'm a career 260 hitter. All right. T-ball all the way through my 6 years of playing
same
professionally.
Numbers.
but got drafted again by the Oakland A's, this time in the 30th round. And
what rounds are there?
Back then it was draft till you drop, because they could do like they would
do Mark McGwire Oakland A's.
Yes, yeah. Yes, wow. Yeah, I played with those guys, and not necessarily on the same team with them, but in the same organization, and occasionally on the same field. But the difference was that was that year, that was that era where there were large guys,
giant humans.
Remember how much I told you I weighed when I finished
120. Yeah.
So now by my freshman year, I get drafted again. I don't take the money right away. They called it draft and follow. But they were like, we want you to go to this community college. So I went to Manatee in Bradenton my sophomore year. And they're like, we want to sign you before the next year's draft. And I signed with them.
This is crazy.
And man, I was 150 pounds playing with all those big guys. And it was unique. I'll just say that.
Okay. So did you end up, I know you graduated from UNF.
Yeah.
You're like saying swoop. We got three UNF graduates.
Let's go.
We love it here.
Yeah.
How'd you end up back in Jacksonville?
So played for 6 years, three different organizations, some amazing stories along the way in that process, and slid into second base, stealing a base against the Cubs in Daytona, and they basically just blew my shoulder up. Shortstop lands as I'm sliding, body keeps going forward.
Yep.
James Andrews did my surgery, very notable guy, and I was one of the few that, and they no longer do that type of procedure anymore. My body scars just really, really bad, and my shoulder froze. Mm. And so this is all the range of motion I have in my left arm. Couldn't pass a physical. Long story short, I moved to Jacksonville because my buddies were all at UNF playing baseball, and one of them was coaching youth baseball. And he's like, come out with this team, Terrence. You can get some reps in. Well, one of the parents was the athletic director at University of North Florida named Richard Gropper, Dr. Gropper. And he gave me a card. He said, we're starting a sport management program. So what are you going to do if you don't finish playing? I'm like, well, one, I'm gonna get back at playing, because I was so close to breaking through.
You were there.
I didn't break through. I didn't get back. So I was the first ever graduating class in the sport management program at UNF with Dr. Jennifer Kane and that crew in the education track. And I coached softball. Never played a game. Had faced fast pitch softball, anything.
There's bases.
I love it.
Bats, right? Yeah.
I love it. It was a precursor to being a father. You know, I'm a 25-year-old young man who's now coaching these 18-year-old amazing athletes. And so it was the blessing in all of it was going through college as an athlete yourself. You have all of these services provided for you, even at the JUCO level. Someone's giving you your schedule, your books, and you got an issue with a professor. They're kind of helping you. I was so worried about going back to college now as a 25-year-old. So by being a coach, I had 18 tutors with me on every bus trip. You know, I look left and right in the class. They're going to obviously be in the front because coach is in the class, but they were also going to make sure coach understood everything. And so I still had that support structure around me to help me really excel in college. And so it all worked out for me.
Did you grow up in the church?
My dad's a pastor.
Okay. I think you said that.
My brother's a bishop in South Carolina. So yes, it's all in me.
You meet a lot of people. We met at LifeWork Leadership. He spoke. He was one of the speakers they brought in at Jack's Golf and Country. It's like, I got to meet this dude. That story was incredible. So grew up in the church. Dad was a pastor.
5 days a week minimum.
So yeah, minimum. that's ingrained in you through your entire life.
Yeah.
So this whole process, when you get frustrated, like you always go back to God.
Always.
Okay.
Begin and end. I try to end my night every night with this prayer. Bless me indeed. And enlarge my territory. Keep your hand upon me and keep evil away that I may not cause pain. I end my prayer. And that prayer, Pastor Spike, he challenged in 2012 his congregation to read that book called The Prayer of Jabez. I read it. And it was the first time that I'd been taught as a church boy that it's okay to pray for myself. I'd always prayed for everyone else and all these other scenarios and just left poor little Terrence out. And man, if we had more time to unpack this from 2012 to now, so many doors were open. I met my in-laws for the first time, 8 years of dating and being married. I got to go out overseas and coach internationally and led my first person to Christ. I got to witness for the first time because that's not really my gift. And just career. I walk away from Christian school education in 2014, chasing after this purpose of trying to make a difference in kids' lives. And that's what led me into public policy. They told me the best way to do it was through policy. I couldn't have told you really the difference between the arguments on the right or the left. I couldn't have told you what a council member was, a congressman. That wasn't the world I grew up in. I grew up in the church world, helping others, keep lights on, and food on the table.
And still doing it now, I think.
Love
with,
it.
With a bigger audience. You said Pastor Spike from Jets?
Yep.
Okay. I'm like, should I say it?
Yeah, yep.
I don't know how many Pastor Spikes are on.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going on a sleepaway camp as a chaperone for my son with Jets Creek. We had a call last night with Pastor Spike.
Nice. His granddaughter's a softball player. Pretty really? Good one. Atlantic Coast High School.
He loves to talk about his daughter playing softball.
His granddaughter, one of my daughters. When you have as many kids as I have, you're going to always cross paths with somebody. So our kids, my daughter and his granddaughters, they played together.
So grew up in the church, didn't leave that world. How many people grow up in the church and faith and are like, enough is enough?
Yeah, I probably could have been one of those statistics. When I was 18, I chose religion as a major. And I should say a minor. I had 10 majors over the course of numerous years of being in college. But I vividly remember telling my parents one time, when I get older, I'm not going to church. And I never forget my mom, and I call her every day, talk to her this morning. She's like, well, who's to say that you're going to get older? Don't take that for granted, Terrence. But I wanted to know, why do I believe the way I believe? And so I studied every religion and came to the conclusion on my own that there was only one, that tomb is empty. And I can go into many other reasons with other religions and faiths, but they all had prophets. They all had a central being, but only one prophet, the tomb is empty. Man, that landed the plane for me.
Yep. There's so much to unpack in 48 minutes. Save that, because I think the second half we'll talk about your journey in healthcare, some more about city council politics, maybe some healthcare.
Ooh.
I hate talking about healthcare, even though this shows what the hell just happened. A couple minutes left to the commercial break. We love shout outs. We've got a couple here already. So Henry Brown with
amazing man,
Miller Electric. Patty, that's your still
Patty
boss.
Patty Keenan, yes.
Shout out to her. Chief talent officer. Pastor Spike. Any, like, who do you like? Hey, I love you. I appreciate you.
Oh,
thank you for
my
everything.
Goodness. I'll tell you, they're numerous and don't ever want to leave any out. But the Timms, Pastor Timms in the city, Elevate Life and Celebration, during some of the toughest times of this political season I'm in and ministry, those two have been just
rocks
for me.
Yeah.
If I send a text that morning, hey, please pray for me, they don't ask questions. They just do it right away. I really appreciate them.
That's two more. We got another 2 minutes here. Any other man shout out to this person?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to my wife. I mean, you see how much I go. I have five amazing kids, 17, 15, 13, 11, and 2.
Hold on, say it again. 17, 15,
13, 11, and 2. The oldest are girls and the youngest is a boy.
Math. 11 minus 2. That's a 9-year difference, buddy.
He'll be 3 in October, but she's the glue.
Yeah.
Doctor's appointments, teaching meetings, all of those things.
Same?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know how she does it. And so she's not allowed to get sick. Because when she does, the kids will remind me, that's not how mama does it.
This is a great question. When I get sick, it's like, when my wife gets sick, it's like,
it shuts everything down. But it puts things in a perspective, because she may go down with an illness and it just jumps around the house. And you get the same thing, or I'll get it, and it's got me in bed for 3 days. And I'm like, how did you manage
function
to do all of these things?
Shout out to the
if
moms.
This is how you felt. And she'll say yes. I'm like, whoa.
I always say, love you, mom. Shout out to my mom.
But I also say this, it's not fair that they get a 9-month head start on us with these kids. And that's why they always choose mamas over us when it's like, hey, you want to come to daddy? So we have that little running joke. Love you, Rachel.
Man, wives are the best.
Yes.
I would say that the household CEO, transportation and logistics manager, right?
HR.
Doctor. Yeah, HR consultants, all the things. We love you, moms. Man, that's the first half that flew by. I knew it would. So, not going to say that title. Works with Miller Electric. See, I'll say it. Senior Project Manager of Workforce Development and Strategic Initiatives with Miller Electric. Yeah. Great company. City Council Member at Large, Terrence Freeman. That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back. Just kidding. Reset. Welcome back to the second half of What the Hell Just Happened. Oh my gosh, if you missed the first half, good news is you can catch the full episode on YouTube, your favorite podcast, all those platforms under What the Hell Just Happened. I love butchering the intros. It's hysterical. No edits. That's our rule. So Terrence here works for a company in Jacksonville. I never heard of it. What's it called?
Miller Electric.
Miller Electric. Never heard of it. You also do something. City Council. That's right. At large. That's kind of a big deal.
We talked. I get to serve.
You get to serve the people.
Yeah.
And you do. Position created for you. Great first half. Great first half, I think.
Loved it. Absolutely loved just a chance to communicate back and forth and just be real. And thank you so much for this opportunity.
It was fun. And there's a lot to unpack. The second half, I'm not sure where to go yet. We'll do healthy or not healthy.
Man, good, you're stumbling a lot.
Damn, I'm stuttering.
Okay?
I'm not.
I'm a good dad too, as well. So
like I'm just overwhelmed by this guy's aura, we'll say. That was the worst second half intro in a while.
I think it's good, man. I think you're setting the table for what's coming.
It's real life.
And I think it's perfect.
Hashtag no edits. first half, we talked a bunch about politics, life, moms. We appreciate you. Work, culture, all that stuff. Second half's going to be heavy, I think. Like, I want to cry.
Yeah, man.
Can you make me cry?
If you cry, you go, I go. That's my rule. So
are you a crier?
When it comes to certain things, and my kids especially, yes. And other people's stories, if they're hurting.
Yeah, guilty.
Yes, I will cry with
you. That's good. Healthy or not healthy, grown men crying.
Love it. They're healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, local politics.
Not healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, politics in general.
Not healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, your suit game.
It's on point.
That's healthy.
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, playing professional baseball.
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, not making it to the big leagues.
Healthy.
Yep. Healthy or not healthy, growing up in the church.
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, 5 kids.
Healthy.
He's firing away.
Yeah.
Letting it rip.
Find an unhealthy. Healthy or not healthy, shanking your second shot after ripping a drive.
Not healthy. Do it often. Do it too often, man. It's guaranteed to happen, by the way. Guaranteed you're going to chili dip your second shot.
Healthy or not healthy. Green and regulation, 3-putt.
Not healthy. Anytime you three
putt. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal. I like good dad, bad dad. You got some, Trey?
Good dad, bad dad. JJ Spahn went in the U.S. Open.
Good
and
dad.
Bringing his kid.
Good. Dad.
It's always awesome to see the guys bring the kids.
I teared up.
All right.
I have chills. Do you see the clip of the daughter like, Daddy, it's past bedtime? And he said, we're going to stay up late tonight.
Yes.
Good dad.
That and the story he had to go out and get medicine that morning, like Pedialyte.
Oh, at 3 a.m.
Yep.
Good dad.
Yes.
Good dad. Good dad, bad dad, taking care of the kids solo when mom's sick. I'm a bad dad.
I try to be a good dad, but I fall short of the mark. I have a rule. You eat when I eat. I eat one time a day. So,
healthy or not healthy? Eating once a day, for real?
It's not healthy, but it works for me.
Do you fast?
Some will define it as intermittent fasting. It's not by design. I just wake up to meetings and calls, and by the time I look up, it's noon, and I still have more calls to make and more meetings to go to, and finally my body starts to remind me that it needs some type of nutrition. Mm. And it's usually by me being foggy or lethargic. And I'm like, why am I so tired? Wait, I haven't eaten. And so I'll grab a bite to eat. And it's usually around 2 to 3, between 2 and 4 I eat. But I drink about a gallon of water a day.
When you eat, is it 2,000 calories in one meal?
No, I eat till I'm satisfied. And a lot of this is a benefactor of coming through radiation. And when I was going through treatment for cancer, I always felt bloated. I always would explain it. I felt like I had a migraine from my belly button to my mid thigh. The medicine that I was taking, and it was hormone therapy treatment. The side effects of it, for men, you become menopausal. And so you're dealing with hot flashes, insomnia, weight gain, mood swings. And so a lot of those factors played into it that when I finished that journey of treatment, my body was not what I remembered it being. I didn't eat often then. I was extremely fatigued, but yet I gained, 10, 15, 20 pounds. So when I got back into the real world and got back to the flow of things, I just played catch up so much that I just never really picked back up eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings with people.
That might have been the perfect transition.
I was like, did you do that on purpose?
That was not on purpose.
Yeah. It was meant to be.
Let's do it, man. You are a saint to Northeast Florida, to your family, to your kids, to men like myself. You beat cancer, right?
Yeah, we did. We did. Diagnosed in my 40s. At that time, I was doing 100 push-ups or sit-ups a night. In the gym, no less than 3 times a week. Coaching, coming off of just the biggest high of my life, making history in our city is the first.
You were what?
I was healthy, man.
Up here.
I was healthy. No visible signs, first time in our city's history, we had, you know, an African-American as president and vice president. First time anyone in the history of our city that anyone had gone from being a district council person to at large to president, just coming off an all time high to be told, hey, you have a death sentence. It was a gut punch. And I'll be very transparent with you guys. I held it from my family for 2 weeks.
You knew.
Yeah. 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 It's a lonely place. Depression is real. It's why I try to be an advocate for so many people now. The first piece of advice I would say is what my doctor told me after I finally got a chance to get with Dr. Mendenhall: do not go to Dr. Google. Because Dr. Google will send you down some rabbit trails and dark holes. But I didn't tell my family because, you know, I'm the provider. And I needed to have a better understanding of what I was dealing with. So how I got diagnosed, when I switched medical providers, Mayo, the oncologist, just called me randomly.
You were at a PCP at one place.
Yep.
Then a primary care physician somewhere else. Sorry, PCP stands for primary care. Okay.
Yeah. I switched providers and Mayo, everything is kind of in-house. And they just started calling me like, please come get checked. And I'm like, no, come get checked. I said, I'm good. I'm healthy. And he says, I'm concerned. I'm like,
did they have something they saw that?
My PSA levels. And that's why I strongly, anyone 45 and older, I encourage you to get your PSA screened regularly. Because prostate cancer is what I had. It's highly curable if caught early. If not, you look at people, and I can name the names of individuals who are no longer with us because it spread outside of their prostate. But I timed it to when I found out every year my kids go to see grandparents. And so I timed it when, I think when my, in July, when my daughters, around July 21st, they were going to see my parents, my mom. And I called a friend and I just asked him this. I said, no questions asked. I need you to be at my house at 5 o'clock, pick me up. Take me to Mayo. I didn't tell him where. I said, I'm going to give you the address where you're going to take me and then get me back home safely. Will you do it? He said, yes. I had on the grungiest sweatpants I could find, hoodie, baseball cap. And I walked in. I did the MRI. And that was early in the morning. By that afternoon, it came back abnormal. We need to do a biopsy. I'm like, crud, no. I'm not doing it.
Because you didn't want to.
No.
You didn't want the results.
I just kept saying I'm healthy.
I want every man to hear this. Like, because we fight it. We're, oh, I got this.
Yeah, macho. Women have it figured out. They have a breast cancer awareness month. I mean, they do it. Men, we're so, you know, egotistical that we're like, no, we're not going to make ourselves vulnerable and share these concerns. And we got to break that stigma. And it just so happened that 2 weeks later or a week later, within a week or 2 weeks, they were going to visit the other set of grandparents. And I called the same friend, and I still never told him. He's a really good friend. I said, same thing, man. I need you to pick me up. I'll tell you where and get me home safe. He does it. And by 1 o'clock that afternoon, it doesn't tell you what stage. It just gives you this long word that I can't pronounce, but it ended with oma, right? Carcinoma.
Yeah.
And I went to Dr. Google, and I shouldn't have.
Ooh.
And I thought I was dying then because you don't know what stage you're in. You just know that you have cancer in your body now. And you know how quick it can spread depending on what stage it's at. So I started going through all my finances and trying to find out, you know, how many bills have I been paying and trying to laying everything out so that, you know, when the time comes and I share it with Rachel, she'll have a plan forward. I think after about 3 days, I called my brother and I said, my older brother, and I said, Eric, I need to share something with you, but please don't tell mom.
Older or younger?
He's older. I said, please do not tell anyone. Don't tell mom yet. And I said, I've been diagnosed with cancer. And I was actually getting ready to walk into a school in Arlington that does care for special needs students at the time. And so think about it. You go from this death sentence that you're in your lowest of lows, and then you get out the car and you got to be what everyone expects you to be. And I did that for weeks. But the first thing he did was connect me with a friend who was going through the process. And that's why I learned the value of having someone to walk through it with you that can really help your mental well-being as you're going through this, I call it the valley of the shadow of death. And you're going to walk through this valley, but, you know, he's going to prepare a table for you. And I could quote the whole 23rd Psalms. Like, I walked that out. But then once I got all it together, I told Rachel, and I'll never forget. I said, she was in bed. And I said, look, I got to tell you something. She says, what? I said, while y'all were gone, I went to the doctor, annual stuff to get checked, and I have cancer. And the look on her face was like, oh, no.
Oh.
I said, we're going to beat it. We're going to beat it. But we need to go and do some follow-ups. And we didn't tell the kids. So Rachel knows and I know. And we did all of the necessary things of talking to doctors and finding the best path forward. And that was how I landed with doing proton therapy.
We'll go to proton therapy in a second because you said a few things. Your brother, older or younger?
My older brother. Yeah.
You guys tight?
Oh, man. He's a bishop up in South Carolina. We grew up together.
Talk.
We're thick as thieves.
How often?
We'll communicate several times throughout the week, but yep. It's one of those deals, if he called right now.
Every week?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not every day, but every week. If he calls, you're answering.
Very, very close.
The friend.
Yeah.
Everybody needs that friend. If you don't have that dude or guy, girl, whatever, meet me here at 5 a.m. I need you.
Yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah.
So that friend, you guys still tight?
Oh, yeah. To no end.
That matters, man. You got a brother, a friend doing it, held that tight to the sleeve. When'd you tell your kids?
That was the hard part.
Yeah.
So Rachel and I, we did our consultations and we came up with a plan forward. And I had this burden that was on me of, all right, Terrence, you have this. Are you going to hide this from the world and continue to be living in this space of darkness, but yet walk out and pretend like everything's okay? Or are you going to be vulnerable and share this? Because who else is going through this same process and needs to hear this?
A lot.
And so I decided to go public. So before I was going to go public, I needed to tell my kids. I've cried two times during the cancer journey. And this was the first time I shed a tear. I crafted the message that I was going to put on Twitter, and I'm not very good on social media and all those things. I hate if I don't get the comma right or if I misspell a word. So I get minor anxiety attacks every time I try to post something. But I crafted this whole spiel that I was going to share with the world. And so my oldest daughter, who was always up doing homework, you know, I'm like, hey, I need to share something with you. And so she comes in the kitchen and I'm like, I need you to read this. And so, I'm coming home after a council meeting. And mind you now, several months earlier, when my son was born October 24th of 2022, he went straight to NICU and almost passed away. And
Wolfson's?
We were at Baptist South. He didn't have to go to Wolfson's. He stayed in NICU down there. And on the council side, I was in federal court for redistricting. I was dealing with a lot of things on all these fronts. Never shared anything about my son, but showed up every day while my wife was at the hospital in the same t-shirt and shorts that she went in on a Monday. She left with on a Wednesday or Thursday. And then I'm diagnosed and I go through this journey. So I unpacked all of that and finally got through those emotions of my son's healthy. He's alive. I didn't choose service over being a husband and being a father. I was able to do them both well. And now I'm facing this battle. And so she reads it and she's like, okay. And I was like, wow, that was easy. That was easy. And she's my mini me. Like, we are not very emotional when it comes to certain things.
How old was she at the time?
15. And as I'm getting ready to walk away, and it was late after council meeting, so it was after 9 o'clock, she grabs me. And my daughter, we're not very affectionate kind of people. And she puts her head in my shoulder and sobs like I've never seen my child sob before. Right? And so I was like, wow, this is serious. This is real, Terrence. Like, you're not going to be able to out-tough your way through this. And I vividly remember after she pulled away and she ran into the bathroom. And so I run into my bedroom, and like usual after council meeting, I got the two youngest in my spot in the bed. So she's 15, 13. So I got an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old in my bed. And I'm like, hey, go to your room.
I need a moment.
And I wake Rachel up, and she's like, what? And I'm like, your child needs a hug. And she's like, why? I said, I just told her that I have cancer. And she didn't take it like I thought she would. And I never forget, Rachel jumps out of bed, throws her glasses on. She runs through the house, and I'm following behind her. And she knocks on the door, and I see the door open slowly. And I see her open her arms, and my oldest just just falls in her arms, right? And it's the uniqueness of having kids. So, you know, my book ends, my 9-year-old.
I love it. The book
she
ends.
She started crying and then said, Dad, are you going to be all right? And I'm like, I promise you, Daddy's going to be fine. My middle two, okay, Dad. That was the extent of it. But that was the first time I shed a tear in the process. But it gave me something to fight for. You know, I knew God didn't give me that little boy as a mentor to a lot of young men in our city whose fathers are not present in their lives. I knew he didn't give me that young man for him to go through that same journey. And I also wanted to dance at my daughter's wedding. And so I never feared death. I never feared death. But I feared missing their weddings. Mm. And I was going to do whatever it took to be there. And so I went through some tough times to sit here with you all.
Hey.
Yes, sir, brother.
You're still here, man. Oh, 4 daughters, 1 son. That's all I think about is dancing at my daughter's wedding. That's, I might get choked up thinking about it. That's all I care about. Just make it there. Thank you for sharing that. Woo. That's heavy. Did that. Then you fought and won. Proton therapy. We don't have to go into the science behind it. We're going to get you up.
Dr. Mendenhall, as she's Dr. Mendenhall. She's amazing. Shout out. Yes, love her. Love Dr. Mendenhall. Her calmness. My grandmother was everything to me. And I could hear my grandmother's voice. She nicknamed me her wisdom boy when I was 4 days old.
It's a good nickname.
I could hear my grandmother's voice and calmness through Dr. Mendenhall. And so I had the utmost confidence in her. And we still communicate to this day. I'm an advocate. I don't ever want to go through it again. But if someone's got to go through it, I would strongly encourage them. Explore all of your options. But if you're in need, call me. I'm here. I'm readily accessible. And I'll gladly share with you my journey at UF Health and the Proton Therapy Institute.
Shout out UF Health. Go ahead, Trey.
Yeah, I actually wanted you to touch on the proton therapy. Because is that a particular type?
Version, yeah.
Yep. So to kind of give you a high level, the first big option for most people is a prostatectomy, which is where they'll go in, cut, and remove the prostate.
Okay.
That gives you the peace of mind. It gives people the peace of mind that the cancer is out of their body. But you having a surgical procedure.
Yeah.
You look at me as a former professional athlete who'd had numerous surgeries. My career ended with surgery not going the greatest. And so I was like, that's not necessarily an avenue that I want to pursue because you're out for several months. And if you think of like when moms give birth, they have to do their Kegel exercise. They have to kind of retrain their muscles.
Kegels.
There it is. There it is. Kegel. There it is. Thank you.
Oh, wait. I needed a laugh.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if that's
accurate. No. So, my wife will laugh at me because I will butcher words often. And then you have another form of it, photon, where it's like the X-ray machine.
Yeah.
And that gets a larger area. So you're damaging other organs in trying to treat something the size of a walnut. And then you have proton, where they can go in and put metal seeds into your prostate, and then put these high power beams that just go directly to those metal implants, and it heats up so much that it kills the cells. And so that's kind of the differences between the three options that I had. And with proton therapy, you know, most are able to still continue their days, depending on what time of your treatment. The hormone therapy on top of it is what really adds to the challenge.
Gotcha.
And whether you need to just stay home and recover, or if you can continue to function in your daily.
You mentioned like men getting checked before 45. Do you have any like ideas on how you think you could rally men? Because I mean, like even through this podcast, this is a common conversation. Yep. I mean, I share a lot with him. I would credit him with, there's going to be a lot of things I'll probably fix and go get checked out just because I have conversations with him. Do you have any ideas on how we rally men around?
I think it's more people who have a platform and a voice to talk about it, the importance of it. I'm currently working on a project now that's going to bring awareness and hopefully bring screening to large activities, sporting activities or events that are happening in our communities. Taking it to the community as opposed to, because the healthcare conversation, and I shared this in one of the interviews, it's one thing to get the diagnosis of cancer, i.e. a death sentence, maybe. But it's another thing to get awareness about the forms of treatment. And there are many people that are in our communities in Jacksonville that when they get the diagnosis, they don't have that what next. And we're a very benevolent community. I mean, we have a lot of donors that are willing to pony up money to help on this side of it. And I want to play a part of bridging that gap that, you know, in certain communities where they may not have a PPO like I had.
And sign
I,
me up.
I had two of them, right?
Yeah.
And I could go to this doctor and that doctor to get the information that I needed to make the best decision to choose it. And then I had the coverage for my cancer treatment. They may not have that. I want to be a bridge to try to help with that. And I don't want that burden to fall on government. I think that as a community between the church and our nonprofit sector, we should be able to bridge that gap.
God, I love what you just said there.
Sign me up.
I'll be reaching out.
I mean, yeah, but there's so much to unpack. That was a lot, man, but which I love. Don't use Dr. Google because you will go down a spiral. That's the, like, if anyone asks advice, like, don't Google it and start reading because you're going to make yourself worse off than you were. For men, this is opinion, like, you're not that tough. None of us are. We're all going to the same place, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. True.
Don't be scared to ask, look for help. But it's 2025. It's not 1983. That was the year I was born. I'll age myself. Ask questions. Find that dude that'll show up at 5 a.m. for you.
So. Eric, the real strength is being vulnerable. And in the first book I read, and there were several that I read during my course of treatment, was a book that was called No More Faking Fine. And once I read that book, it was really the first time that, again, I shared with you, like, praying for myself was something new for me. This was the first time that it was really brought to my light that if someone says, Terrence, how are you doing? My answer used to always be blessed or highly favored or fantabulous, right?
Those outstanding.
Yep, no.
I'm great.
When I was having a bad day, I would say, hey, I'm not at my best today. And what I loved about Miller Electric, and this is why, I mean, I never say no when they ask for anything. They told me, Terrence, no, you're not doing FLMA. You're going to still stay in work. And I would get up and go into my little office space. And if I needed to put my head down, I would do it. And I would tell people the value of that
healthy.
Is every morning I woke up and I got to that front door. Depression was waiting on the outside of it. And I had a choice. I could open that door, allow depression to come in, and I go lay back down and sleep, which I did for the first 3 days of treatment. It's amazing. I never would lay. I don't need much sleep. I was never a guy. I don't take naps. But for 72 hours, I laid in a bed with hot flashes and just feeling sorry for myself. And that wasn't the best version of me. And so by Miller allowing me still to go to work, I didn't travel as much as I did prior, but it gave me a chance to get back out and tell people, no, I'm not at my best today. And they would pray for me and then give me my space. But I wasn't sitting at home alone feeling sorry for myself. And then can I tell you another sobering moment?
Yes.
Sitting in that waiting room every morning before treatment. You know, there are these gentle reminders that, you know what? It stinks. Embrace the suck, right? It does stink. But when you see a little kid come walking in and they're facing this same battle that you're facing, but yet you've got 40 plus years of life and professional baseball and all of these stories, and that little innocent child with such a bright future ahead of them, and you know what they're going through, it was such a sobering moment. And I tell you, those types of things, those moments added fuel for when I come through this. There's gonna be no bigger advocate than me and my role in life and these positions that I hold to try to help those kids and to try to help others who may be facing these types of these issues.
We've gone over time. I don't even care. We record a certain time frame to get it on the radio show and we'll edit it down. But
that's fine, man.
You can't. I have like 500 more questions.
Let them come, man. This is health. This is therapy for me.
Health again.
This is therapy for me.
I'll say it. Well, let me. That's what the hell just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll edit it down. I love when guests start texting or calling or emailing randomly, like healthy or not healthy. It's my favorite question. These conversations are healthy.
Yeah.
For men and women who are going through it or will go through it, or parents. We didn't even talk about that. Coaching youth sports. That's a scary one, your own kids. I appreciate you sharing that.
No,
that was
so good, man.
helpful. Go ahead, Trey.
I have one final. Well, we're not even on the show, but
We'll edit it down for the whatever you need. This will be on the podcast for sure.
You
the radio show will trim down. But
you mentioned you kept it away from your wife for 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Did she ever like, hey man, I just feel like, are you all right? Like, did she ever catch she you or like,
no,
you just no?
Because I kept going to the gym.
Yeah,
I kept doing. I remember I was healthy. Yeah. I felt great. I've just been told I have a silent killer inside of me that has no signs, and it's not gonna manifest until it's too late if you don't address it now. And truth be told, the first doctor we went to, and she's sitting next to me, I said, Doc, I hear everything you're saying, but baseball season starting, I got 121 kids that I'm responsible for. I got 9 or 10 teams that I'm responsible for. This is not a good time for me to do this. Can this wait until December, Christmas break? The council's just starting up. And he looked at me and said, what about your own kids? And that was the first time she spoke up. She was like, yeah, what about us? And I looked.
Kids call that? A mic drop?
Yeah.
That used to be the line.
Yeah. Like, you're right. Keep talking, Doc.
So. What's, I got to ask this. Did you have fun on the show?
Loved it.
Would you come back?
Absolutely.
I love asking that question. What's next? Right. I mean,
yeah. I am termed out, and it was during that journey of cancer that I asked God that question. Like, really, what is next for me? Like, this council is where I was told that I could help kids. I've done a lot for them. My term's up. You know, there are people in the community who are like, well, will you consider this big office here locally or that? And I'm like, no, I don't feel called to do that right now. And many times they would say, well, why not? I'm like, look at the times we're living in where everything is so extreme. And here I am sitting in the middle that says, I want to love you, everyone. And I want to try to find a way for some common ground. It may be 1% of that 100, but let's do 100% of that 1%. And I said, I don't feel like as a society, we're there yet. And so I just really started just praying, like, what's next? Am I done in this space of service? That's fine. I'll go back to teaching, baseball, whatever. And Tallahassee comes up. Born in Tallahassee Memorial, grew up on the south side of Tallahassee.
You can say that.
Yeah,
surrounded by Gators.
Grew up in Tallahassee?
Yeah, man. To age 8, and then we moved to Brandon.
Okay.
And so I started talking to some people about what's a state rep do? And I started learning more about Tallahassee and made the decision probably January that, all right, this is something I want to pursue. So I'm going to be running for the House District 12 seat, which is Ortega, Mandarin, San Marco, Julens and Creek area. I think we're close to it right now, if not in it. And my kids all go to school right here at Bowles. My wife teaches there now. And we'll be kicking off in the fall, and the election will be next year around this time, August of next year, 26.
So 26.
Yeah.
Let's go, man. All right.
Is that online?
And I'm scared. Cool. I'm scared to death.
No.
Again, and that's what I told one of the
You pastors. Beat a lot harder
I did, right?
than that. Yeah.
That's what I told one of the Pastor Tims is like, it seems like in this walk of this political space, the illustration I can give is to turn all the lights off in the room. That's how I feel at times. And then all of a sudden, a step will light up in front or to my left or my right, and I'm just commanded to go to that step. And that's what I feel like in Tallahassee. I'm like, wow, this is big. It's a lot of moving pieces. It's away from my family, 60-day sessions. And I'm like, God, if this is the path, you know, make it known. And doors just start opening.
Here it is.
And the support that I've gotten when I would go over and talk to people has left me with no other recourse that, as Sheriff Glover told me when I was contemplating taking the appointment, he says, if you have the courage to go, God will equip you. And I'll never forget, he said, Terrence, there are little boys and girls sitting in classrooms right now. They don't care about Republican or Democrat. They care about if you're a good person, and you are, and they need to see this. So if going to Tallahassee is the next step in helping little boys and girls sitting in classrooms understand that good people can occupy this space and you can do a lot of good despite all of the distractions that the media and everything kind of highlights at times, then I'm willing. Send me, I'll go. And so put myself forward.
Proverbs 27:17.
You got to quote it for me. Let me hear it.
Remember?
You got to tell me, man.
I like anyone that's a man or woman of faith is iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another.
Yeah.
So I say, thank you for being my iron.
Mm.
That was incredible. We'll see how we edit the radio show down. I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? It's their problem.
Terrence, thanks for joining me.
No, my pleasure.
It was incredible.
Man. No,
we'll get
pleasure.
You back
anytime.
Dive deeper, but that's what the hell just happened.